Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Wow.
Hello and welcome to the Born Japan podcast, probably the best way of learning about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host, Chris Broad, and we're joined, as always, by England's top Japan enthusiast, Mr. Pete Donaldson. Pete, how are you doing today?
I'm good. I'm happy to be back on the Born Japan podcast for a Sunday night slash Monday morning. It's weird that this show comes out in a Sunday night at 10 p.m. It's a weird time for any podcast to be released, but it's ready for the morning commute, those of you who are still commuting.
All part of our diabolical plan to get the podcast out to people on Monday who aren't going to be commuting. I think what people in the UK aren't commuting for at least another 2 months, right? Well, for most folks.
Yeah. Well, I mean, nobody should be working. There's a lot of people that are, like, we closed down our studio for obvious reasons, but there's a lot of people that I know who are working, who are going into town that don't really need to be in town. They'll be in trouble when I shop them.
big trouble. But not as
big
much
trouble.
Not as much trouble as the 171 territories that the UK has invaded or fought conflicts with. At the end of Wednesday's podcast episode, I said I would tell you the name of a book. I can't remember how we even got into the debate. I think we got a comment from one of our listeners who asked if Japan would ever become multicultural. I said no, and then I said the reason the UK is multicultural is because of the empire and the fact we took over half the world, whilst Japan remained relatively isolated, and is why that is why it's still homogenous. And then I think I talked about how the UK has invaded most of the world, and the book is called All the Countries We've Ever Invaded, All the Countries We've Ever Invaded, and the Few We've Never Got Round To. And apparently, out of 193 countries, we have invaded 171, 90%. What does that tell you about the British people, Pete?
Bit industrious in when it comes to killing people.
Yes. I don't know if it's a badge of pride to wear. Mm. It's not really, but Britain certainly has a pretty interesting history. Interesting and best forgotten in some respects.
Yeah.
We got a story this week from Sean from Illinois in the US. And a few weeks ago, we talked about what we would do if we had $185 billion. The amount of money that Elon Musk currently has, unless his share price has tanked at the moment we've been broadcasting this, and it could well happen because I've noticed Bitcoin and Tesla have been a bit dicey recently. But Sean says, hi, Chris and Pete, love the podcast. I thought if I had the full $185 billion, it's a little bit unrealistic since you can't liquidate it all at once. So I've made a list of world-changing things you could do with just $50 billion, a measly $50 billion, by taking 10% from the combined net worth of Musk, Bezos, and Gates. Feel free to use this stuff from the list. And he's got three ideas if he had $50 billion. Number one, Sean would develop 151 new Cyberpunk 2077 games based on the fact that each game costs $300 million to make. Number two, he would buy every single person on Earth a Son of Baconator burger from Wendy's based on the 7.8 billion people and my local US price of $5. And third and last, he said, bribe Ken Watanabe into collaborating with Chris. Everyone has their price. I feel it. Why do I worry that the last point is the most unrealistic? That it's probably easier to buy everyone a burger than it is to collaborate with Ken Watanabe. Who knows? Maybe this could be the year. Could be the year, right?
I just want to know what a Son of Bacon burger is. Interesting.
Son of Bacon. Yeah. I don't know either. I know what the Baconator is. It's like my favourite burger from Wendy's. It's just a burger covered in bacon and cheese. But the Son of the Baconator, what is that?
Tiny, like a little kind of slider burger. Slider burger.
Wendy's is good, though. I don't want to go off on a tangent here about Wendy's, but it is pretty good. We don't have them in the UK. They failed. Sadly.
I was in Leon C quite recently, and they had a Wimpy's on the street. I was like, wow, I haven't seen Wimpy's for years.
How would you describe Wimpy's to our audience who don't know what Wimpy's is?
They managed to get away in 2020 still selling a hot dog called a bender in a bum. So
good God.
Because that's what they call their hot dogs, I believe. Yeah.
That is shocking.
I might be wrong on that one. I'm fairly certain that's the case.
I mean, Wimpy is a British fast food restaurant that should have died 20 years ago. And I don't know how it's still there. I've been in there once, right? And all my American friends are like, oh, we've got In-N-Out Burger. We've got Five Guys. Mm. We've got Wendy's. It's brilliant. In the UK, we've got Wimpy. And look, the name alone is an alarm bell, right? Wimpy. But the one time I went in there, I was at a service station in Kent, near where I'm from. And I pulled over. I was really hungry. I needed something to eat after a long day at work. And Wimpy's was the only restaurant open that day. And I ordered a burger and I sat down. I was like, you know what? It's not going to be a good burger, but I'm so hungry, I could eat anything. And I opened the box and a fly just went, just flew out. And I threw the box right in the bin. That was the first and last time I've ever went to Wimpy. And I hope this doesn't count as defamation.
Yeah.
It's bloody awful. Seriously, you couldn't have bloody made it up.
Eating like little bugs and stuff. You've on more than one occasion gone to a Japanese gift shop and bought some.
Well, yeah, I suppose. We had the hornet larvae, didn't we? And
exactly.
You can eat cockroach, locust in Humber, and I did
eat everything.
I did also do a Singaporean TV show about 2 years ago. I don't know. You get these like really weird situations that crop up as a YouTuber. And about 2 years ago, a Singaporean TV show, and I can't remember the name of it, invited me to come on and film an episode in Tokyo with a really cool girl, Singaporean presenter called Roz. I think her name was Roz. And it wasn't eating good food. It was like an insect restaurant. And we ate just like underwater creatures that I still have nightmares about. And
it's like I'm a celebrity.
It was a bit like I'm a celebrity. And I had to eat like some sort of underwater cockroach thing that I'm trying to forget. I don't do insects. Horrible. Horrible. We've got a story this week that everybody in the world has been messaging us about. And I think you've had it as well, Pete, haven't you? What is the story?
I've had it a few times, yeah. Man who is – you see this quite a lot in Japan. You certainly see this a lot in stories that leave Japan anyway, about men and women who hire themselves out to do different things. They can be your friend. They can be your enemy. They can be a fake date, a fake husband, a fake wife, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And this time around, this guy has created a little kind of niche for himself. I think he lost his job and he needed something to do. And he basically has found himself renting himself out to do nothing online. And he's got thousands of clients. He turns up for 70 quid plus expenses for travels and meals. Shoji Morimoto, 37, from Tokyo in Japan. He does nothing except eat, drink and give a simple response.
Sounds like most of my friends, to be honest. That's a steal. 10,000 yen.
He put a tweet out saying, is it difficult for you to enter a shop on your own? Are you missing a player on your team? Do you need someone to keep a place for you? I can't do anything except easy things. So now he, yeah, originally he used to offer his services for free. Now he charges so that time wasters don't get involved and get him to just do stuff. But yeah, he's just a guy who will be non-committal in every, you know, request that you ask of him. You just ask him a question, do you like my hair? He's like, yes, all right. Like, he's just, he gives nothing. He demands nothing. He's, yeah, he's Soji Morimoto.
Sounds like the perfect husband.
I know, right?
I love the way he's been portrayed in the media. Like the article that we've got here, it says Japanese man you can rent to do nothing has thousands of clients. I feel that's selling him a little bit short, though. Like, to, you know, he's done some actually good things. He's been hired to have lunch. He's been hired to pose for photographs on Instagram. He's been hired to accompany someone filing for divorce, or to catch butterflies in the park and listen to healthcare workers struggling with their work. One man, I mean, those are the nice ones. There are some troubling ones, like one man hired Shoji to describe a murder he had committed, while another paid him to take him from the hospital to revisit the spot where he had attempted suicide. I guess, I guess it says more about Japanese society than Shoji Morimoto, that people need to pay to have this kind of friendship, this sort of figure accompany you to these moments of distress, like filing for divorce. Like, I don't know. What do you make of it? It's all rather bizarre.
It is a bit much, isn't it? But yeah, I mean, you'd think you would be able to find a friend who gives you, you know, precisely nothing. That's literally, he's offering nothing at all, and people find it very difficult to even, you know, get that out of their friends, which is really disappointing.
I mean, they say that, you know, people with problems, all they need is someone to just listen to them talk, right? So I guess in that regard, even if he just turns up and does nothing, I mean, I can just imagine, like, you getting all your problems off your chest, right? Just talking, and he's just sitting there eating some crackers, eating some biscuits or something really loudly. That would be a bit annoying. But I imagine he's good. I imagine he just sits there and listens. But it's worked because he's got 270,000 Twitter followers. It's led to books. It's led to a television drama. One of his clients posted online, I'm glad I was able to take a walk with someone while keeping a comfortable distance where we didn't have to talk, but could if we wanted to. While another wrote, I'd been slack about visiting the hospital, but I went because he came with me. That's nice, isn't it? I think we all need
that's a positive thing, yeah, definitely. Just someone to hold your hand, or not hold your hand, rather, in his case, and just, you know, stand next to you and not say anything. Perfect friend in many ways.
I mean, we've had these sort of stories before, haven't we? We've had the old rent-a-family, where you can rent a family, a fake family. Yeah. I don't know why. I think if you want to experience happiness, you can rent like a husband or children or a wife or children. I think we had a story where somebody did it to impress their parents. Their parents were worried about their child, their son,
right,
not having like a... just being really lonely in his 40s. So he temporarily paid for a family, like a wife and two kids, to accompany him to his parents' house and be like, look, this is my family. They're definitely real. And, you know, it saved his elderly parents from being stressed.
Well,
they were none the wiser. What else have we had? I mean, hostess, it all feels like a bit like the whole kind of hostess, hostess bar, hostess club scenario where you just sort of go to a hostess club and sit and pay extortionate sums of money for somebody to just listen and pour your drinks and just sit there. You know, I get the impression that having done it for, you know, a fair few times, especially up in Yamagata, where there's not a whole lot to do in terms of nightlife, when you go there to a hostess club and you sit there, you kind of see all these lonely looking figures. A lot of guys go in there alone. They turn up, they sit, they drink, they smoke, they do a bit of karaoke. And they kind of get over the loneliness by being surrounded by hostess women, who are often very nice and very good at conversation. It's not as shady as you think. But I think it's along that principle. Like, in Japanese culture, if you give someone a present or give them something, you're obligated to kind of return that. And so by paying money, you don't feel that sense of obligation, which is why people are happy to pay to have a host or a hostess woman sort of sit there and talk to them, or to hire Shoji Morimoto to come with them and do things, because, you know, you might feel a bit awkward asking your friend to come with you to the hospital or catch butterflies in the park. Whereas Shoji Morimoto, you pay him your money, you pay him the 10,000 yen, about $100, and he comes along, he won't judge you, he'll accompany you, and he'll, you know, make you feel less lonely, and you won't feel obligated at the end of it to return a gift to him or anything. What do you reckon? Is that a good assessment? Am I making it up?
I think it's a nice look. It's all a nice idea. I think it's fair to say it sort of puts you in mind of you know, people who kind of, they're in like a sort of a relationship with a friend, and they give too much financially, or they give too much emotionally, and they get nothing in return. Is that a healthy relationship to be in? Is probably not, but if it's a business kind of transaction, maybe that's fine. I it doesn't sit amazingly well with me. I probably wouldn't do it, because I question people's reasons for doing what they do anyway. So I'd find it quite difficult. I think.
What would you do if you, next time you come to Japan, right? And you think, wait a minute, I've got $100 that I'm willing to spend. Let's bring up Shoji. What would you do? What would you do for an hour? Where would you take him? Karaoke?
I don't know. Just maybe go into those batting cages, whack some balls around. Play some Mario Kart, something like that.
Play some Mario Kart. I'd like to use him as an extra in Abroad in Japan, actually. Could be cool.
Yes.
Imagine that. I just give him like a grand. Like, here's $1,000, Shoji. Come with me for the week and we'll just go on a road trip and just see what happens.
Yeah.
And I'll just be me like chatting shit in a car. And every time I turn the camera to him, he's just sitting there munching some Pringles, saying nothing.
I wonder if anyone would hire me.
Hire you for $100?
Yeah. Yeah.
What would you do? Would you just sit and eat food?
Similar sort of thing. A very low energy friend, I suppose. And then I'd come to life at certain points.
A very low energy friend. It feels like whenever you come over here, whenever I see you, I always see you like early on when you've just arrived and you're jet lagged to hell. And you are very much a low energy friend. So I know what that's like. I can get a taste of that.
Yeah.
I think that's rather lovely. What do you make of it, guys? Let us know at abroadinjapanpodcast@gmail.com. I won't judge, but I think it's quite nice. I like that. And I'm going to dig a bit deeper and try and find out more about Shoji Morimoto. I'm sure it won't be long before one of the foreign YouTubers living here will be making a documentary about him or shoving him in a video somewhere. So we'll get the answers. Will it be me, though? Don't know. What do you reckon? I could do. I'm awfully tempted.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we're way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? Mine's pretty low after coming back from the craziness of WrestleMania, too many body slams and all that. And I'm pretty jealous of my co-host Chris, who seems to have been exploring Japan's most isolated hotel. He's definitely winning in the relaxation race, but I'm determined to catch up with him. It can be easy to get swept up in social gatherings and spread ourselves too thin, but with therapy, you can learn to prioritize your time and recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Japan today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Japan.
This week at Sukarnov.
Me and Luke have been whiling away the lockdown with our usual nonsense on the Luke and Pete Show. Here's a quick taste of the kind of challenges we've been setting for ourselves.
Give us any nation and I'll tell you why they're dirty.
All right, I'll do it now.
Italy. Yeah. It looks like a sexy boot.
There's also a brand new episode of On the Continent, your weekly guide to the sublime and frequently ridiculous in European football. Find it over on Football Ramble Presents every Thursday.
Neymar's responded to this in kind that they forgot to tell you how to win titles. Then Alvaro has responded with a picture of Pelé with three World Cups going in the eternal shadow of the king.
This reminds me of Stormzy and Wiley. The spikes that they have.
All that and a whole lot more at Sukarnov.
We now turn our attention to the fax machine. What have we got this week in the fax machine, Mr. Dawson?
We've got a message from Dakota. Hello, Dakota. Hello, Chris and Pete. I'm Dakota from Lincolnshire. I've long been a follower of the channel and I only just discovered the podcast. Love your work, guys. I'm thinking about doing a bike ride across Japan, much like your own journey across Japan, except with a tent. Oh, that's all it needs. That's all it needs in your journey across Japan to make it in any way palatable to you, a tent. What would you recommend as a 5 must cycle spots in Japan? And also what Japanese food items would you recommend to keep up energy while cycling? Dakota, of course, energy jelly. Chris is going to say energy jelly.
Well, yeah. Good old crack out Dr. Jelly. Job done.
Yeah.
That's a good question, though, isn't it? 5 must cycle spots in Japan. I feel relatively well qualified to answer this. Before I do, though, have you got anywhere to add to the list, Pete? Any places in Japan you cycled a few times now?
Yeah, well, it's only like that little cycle that we did into Kyoto. So that little cycle from, is it Lake Biwa, wherever it was?
Lake Biwa,
That was lovely. So, yeah, recommend that massively.
I mean, yeah, that's my number one. Probably my number one spot, actually. I think that was one of my favourite days cycling, scenery-wise, anyway. Lake Biwa, which is the lake just outside of Kyoto. You can get there in about 25 minutes or half an hour outside of the city. Lake Biwa, Shimonami Kaido, got to mention that, obviously, given it's the 100-kilometre cycle route that goes across the inland sea. Number 3, I would say Yamagata Prefecture, where I used to live, is beautiful. There's lots of rice fields and plains. And though it's very mountainous, you can sort of find your way. You can be sneaky and slalom your way between the mountains. And in fact, if you look at the route we took on Journey Across Japan, didn't cycle over a single mountain. It was rather clever. It was a genius, because it wouldn't have lasted very long if I did. After that, it gets a bit more complicated, actually. 2 more places. Any ideas, Pete?
As a city, Kyoto is very beautiful, but it does get very busy in the summer. So if you're doing it outside of high season, that's probably not a bad, beautiful little ride. Maybe over to Himeji Castle. I don't know.
I was going to say, actually, the day after you left, Ryotaro turned up, and the journey across Japan just nosedived after that. After Pete left Kobe, Ryotaro joined, and we cycled from Kobe all the way down to Himeji. And that was really nice. And I probably recommend that. Or Kurashiki, the city that looks a lot like Venice, the Venice of Japan, Kurashiki. That gets my vote. So Lake Biwa, number one, Shimonami Kaido, Yamagata, Kyoto, and Kurashiki. Those are my five. So do it. Next time you come over to Dakota, get it done. It's an amazing route. The one from Greg says, hello, gentlemen. I just want to write a short note with an idea about what you could do one day. Journey Across Japan, Elite Pete Edition, where Pete tries to accomplish his goal of learning Japanese by immersing himself on a Japan studying trip where he visits different locations. Maybe he could even have lessons. I think it'd be a nice parallel project to Natsuki quitting smoking. All the best, guys. Greg. Elite Pete Edition. What do you reckon?
Natsuki just needs to stop doing something. I need to fill my head with stuff that's not going to stay in there. That's not fair, is it? Stop having a tab, for crying out loud, Natsuki.
I quite like this idea. I mean, I love the idea of travelling plus learning. I don't know how you would kind of combine. I don't know how it'd be done, though. How would you learn Japanese?
No, I mean, I'm already this year thinking, oh, I might make a concerted effort to learn a bit more Japanese, and I've done nothing. I've just haven't had time. Every time I sort of sit down to sort of do, I'm just like, oh, I've got to do this now. I'm going to go do this. There's always something to be done. That's the you got to cleave parts out of the day for yourself, haven't you?
No, you're absolutely right. I've been doing this thing, haven't I, where I Skype Natsuki every week. We do like a video chat, and the idea was I speak Japanese half an hour, he speaks English, and we both improve. But in the 2 or 3 weeks we've been doing it, I haven't studied any Japanese really, because I just haven't had time. So I just turn up and we chat, and it's great. But like, the idea was to practice and learn new things. But after this podcast, I swear to God, I'm going to sit down, I'm going to study for at least 20 minutes, and I'm going to take that, the new grammar and the new vocab that I've just learned, and I'm going to take that through to my conversation with him tomorrow. But I do love studying. It's annoying not having time to do it, and I'm not making excuses. You know, it's really important sitting on Reddit all day and looking at the funny posts. That's really important. You know, has to be done.
It's a bit time for yourself, isn't it?
Time for myself. 2 hours. I do think, you know, I like the idea of coming to Japan and doing a challenge like that, though. And I don't think you would, though, P. Because you come over here, you're usually a bit burnt out from doing 450 podcasts, and you just kind of want, you know, a 2 week trip to get drunk and just drink.
Get drunk.
Look at the shrines and get even more drunk.
Look at the shrines. By the shrines. Well, look, get drunk on shrines. Drink the little water that everyone washes their hands in at the front of the shrine.
Oh, God.
Delicious.
Oh, God. But like, do you have the motivation to do something like that? Do you think, like, go and do like Buddhist monk training for a week? Or
the problem is, that's the thing, though, isn't it? You're in a situation where you're in one of your favorite places in the world, and you're stuck in a you know, a high rise in an office building, you know, learning Japanese. It just seems, it seems a little foolish. And I've never spent more than 2.5 weeks in Japan, cracking on for 3 weeks in Japan. So you know, 1 year. I'll sort of take a month away. I'll take a month away and just enjoy a month, and maybe I'll get something done. But fundamentally, I don't live in Japan. I've never lived in Japan. I probably never will live in Japan. So I'm in a situation where my holidays are my holidays, and they are sacrosanct.
Yeah, absolutely. You've got to safeguard the holidays. I mean, are you one of those people who can learn a language just by kind of listening in? Because when I was in China, I went to China for a trip for a holiday in 2011, I think a year before I came to Japan. And I was there for about a month or so. And a good friend of mine who was on the trip, a guy called Dan, he just picked up Chinese in conversation just by asking people questions and just by listening in. Granted, really? He wasn't fluent after a month, but like, he knew a lot of words and vocabulary, and it was really quite impressive. As for me, I didn't know anything. I couldn't pick it up. I'm the sort of person who needs to sort of sit down, hunch over a textbook, learn a lot of words and grammar, and then go off and use it right. He could just learn it on the fly. And I know a few friends that are like that, who can learn a word, hear it, use it, and practice it. But I just can't do it. I don't know if that's something you can do. You seem quite.
I think you've got
confident.
To be. I think you've got to be young. I know it's a bit of a dead loss, but I do feel like I'm. I can't keep things in my head. I'm very distractible, and yeah, I just find it very difficult to retain information these days. It's very upsetting.
But you did master the art of. You did master the French language in a video.
Yeah,
recently.
Of course. Yes, but yeah, very quickly pick that up.
If you don't know what we're talking about. Go and check out Pete's channel, I Review Planes, and watch him react to Abroad in Japan under his French persona. Your French character, does he have a name? Does he have a name of sorts?
No, he doesn't. I mean, it won't surprise you to realize that I didn't think that far ahead. I was coming in on the train, and I thought, oh.
It was a solid effort, though. Well done.
Cheers, mate. Cheers.
We've got one here from Connor from Michigan. He says, Dear Chris and Pete, I was wondering what the drug culture was like in Japan, if there really is any. Obviously, we all know that everyone drinks and smokes, notably Natsuki. But what about other drugs? Here in the US, marijuana has been increasingly legalized for recreational use, including in my state of Michigan. Now, I can assume that the most drug experience was getting offered a puff at a party back in school, to which you replied, oh, I don't know, guys. I have to get back home to my mum and have a cup of tea, innit? I don't know. I'm not British. Anyway, do any Japanese people smoke marijuana or support its legalization? What about harder drugs? If so, where would they get them from? And what is the penalty for possession? Would the show Breaking Bad be understood in Japan? Let us know. Connor from Michigan, P.S. It's not pronounced Michigan. It's pronounced Michigan. Did you know?
Oh,
Pete?
I see.
I don't know.
No, I didn't. No, I think I would fly straight into Michigan rather than Michigan.
Oh, I'm so rubbish at just places in America. I think I know what I'm. I think I'm clever, but then I screw it up. Like Maryland. It's Maryland, isn't it? Maryland.
Right. Maryland.
Well, Michigan. Look, Michigan.
That's how you say the word. Maryland.
Drugs in Japan. It's just don't do it. The whole culture of marijuana. I've met Japanese people that do it actively, I think, but it's very hard to come by. I've never done it in Japan. I wouldn't dare do it because it's the quickest way to get put in prison. They take it incredibly seriously here. I think that's because it can't be taxed and they don't really know how to tax it. It's ridiculous because obviously they shove cigarettes in your hand for free in Japan. I'm not even exaggerating. You can sit in a bar. It's happened to me numerous times. I'd be sitting in a bar and about, 10 p.m., a team of people come in. There's usually a guy, an attractive young girl, and a guy. And they come in and they work for Marlboro or one of the other companies like Mevius. And they'll be like, hello there, we're from Marlboro. We've got some new cigarettes to try. What flavor do you want? And you just sort of say, oh, I'll have the menthol ones. And they go, yeah. And they give you the cigarettes and they walk off. And it's like market research for them. They want to know which ones you're going to pick. But you just end up getting a free packet of cigarettes. So to say they hand out cigarettes for free in Japan is not an exaggeration. Have you ever experienced that, Pete, or is it just me?
I've seen people giving out cigarettes on the street, which is not something you really see in Europe anymore. But they love people to smoke. I don't understand why they've got a real stick in their behinds about weed, because obviously people get blind drunk every single night, and you imagine that weed is a little safer. Yeah, exactly. You look at any Instagram page of what they're called, Shibuya Meltdown. There's like 15 of them, and they seem to have a fresh batch of people getting out of their bloody tree, lying down in the street, covered in crap, falling in a hedge, blah blah blah, because they've just drank too much. So yeah, it's a situation where I don't really understand why weed is treated differently. I've never really been that into weed, to be honest. I've never really had excellent experiences on it. I understand weed far more. Booze far more. Anything stronger than that in Japan, though. I did get offered from a sort of friend of a friend some coke, I think, at one point, and turned that down. But in Japan, that's my only time I think I've ever been offered anything. I think
I couldn't imagine you taking coke. I don't imagine there'd be much difference because you're already a little bit mental. You're already a little hyperactive.
Sort me jet lag out. mate.
But it's an interesting subject. I'd like to know why that is. But I do think it just comes down to taxation. They can tax the hell out of cigarettes and they can tax the hell out of alcohol. And those things have existed here for a long time, whereas marijuana hasn't really. And it hasn't been smuggled in much, on the same scale at least, as we have over in Europe and in the US. But I'm not sure. But no, just don't do it. Like we have lots of stories from when I was a teacher on the JET program. You'd hear all the time that you know, some ALT would be caught doing marijuana or, you know, just smoking something they shouldn't be, and they lost their job pretty much instantly, and they end up in jail for like a month before they get deported. And I think it'd be a really sad ending to you know, your time in Japan or your job. You'd come over here and then that's it. And I don't know if you get caught doing it, I don't know how easy it is to get back in again. So you're not just killing your chances of having a job and a career in Japan, but you're killing your chances of actually visiting the country, which is why I always say, don't ever do it. Don't do any drugs in Japan. Where were you offered the coke? Not that I want to know. Not that I want to find out. Where was it?
I can't remember. It was some quite it was like a foreigner's bar, I think. Yeah, no, it was a foreigner's bar. I can't remember where it was, to be honest. The guy was DJing. It was because I was complaining that I was really tired.
Oh God,
as I always am. So you know, instead of browbeating me like you do, did you offer me a solution? Oh,
I mean, they do often hand out free free cans of Monster Energy as well. So if you can get some free cigarettes and some free Monster Energy, your evening's sorted, isn't it? You're home and dry.
Definitely.
Keep the stories, questions, comments coming into Abroad in Japan podcast at gmail.com. Pete's actually off next week. We're letting him have the week off. And we're joined by Connor, C-Dog VA. We're going to hang out in Sendai and have a chat and a catch-up. What are you going to do on your week off, Pete? You going to have fun?
No, I'm going to sit in my house and play video games.
Shocking. Oh, dear, oh dear. But stick around, guys, and join Connor and I on Wednesday's episode. But for now, no matter where you might be out there in the big wide world, enjoy what's left of the start of the week. And, well, we'll see you on Wednesday. Have a good one.
All right.
This was a Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, mate.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking out?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.